Welcome to the fifth episode of Demol Belkia Season 12 Recaps from Reality TV Warriors. My name is Michael Hobstone, and joining me as always are the Canadian who we didn't ask what age he had his first kiss at, because the horse would probably complain, Logan Saunders.
Good afternoon.
And the guy who would promise Jill that if he ever met him face to face, the box would open, David Vindley.
Good morning.
Hello, Sunshine.
Hello.
Good weeks.
Pretty good.
Yes, I had a good week.
I think we discussed it last week, but as you said right before we started recording, it is my mum's birthday today on Tuesday, so I've literally just run through the door having paid my respects to the mother, and had a nice day. It was a very nice meal out.
Did you have spaghetti bolognese?
We didn't know. I had fish and chips, but I also had the responsibility, because mum doesn't make her own birthday cake, I had to make that literally after I finished editing Hunted last night. So I edited Hunted, and while the video version was producing, I came downstairs and made the cake. And conveniently, it's actually kind of Mother's Week on the podcast, because Hunted had a very strong through line of mother knows best and a mother winning because of the efforts that her son made.
Interesting.
And it was your mum's birthday as well, wasn't it, Saunders?
Yes, we went out for dinner 2 days ago to an Italian restaurant, believe it or not.
Did you have spaghetti bolognese?
No, garden pesto with rotini. That's another pasta that they could have used in the pasta duel there. Rotini. I forgot about rotini.
I did not go out for dinner, but I finished booking my holiday, which is good.
Where are you going?
So I'm going to Sydney for a few days and then up to Brisbane for a week.
Oh, right. Yeah, I was just thinking about the hotel there, the one with the 70 or 80 thousand floors or something.
Yeah, so I booked in that one, so I'm really hoping there's like not an earthquake while I'm there.
It is always a hope when you go away.
Yeah, this episode is very good at making me terrified for holidays.
Well, as long as your hotel room isn't built out of children's blocks, I'm sure you'll be fine.
Yeah. And if it is?
Well, I guess we're not seeing you at the finale next year.
Yeah. If it is built out of children's blocks, then maybe we'll have to get a last-minute replacement in for the rest of historians.
Yeah.
The other big bit of news from the last week, and Bindles does know a little bit of this, is that I had the onerous task on Sunday of going seeing the dog son and paying my respects. The little slobber monster himself. He is adorable. There is a video that I will probably send to you guys after the podcast of his reaction when he saw first my dad and then me and my brother. As a general rule, he's a dog that does not bark. He just whimpers normally. But as soon as we opened the back door of the neighbor's house, he rushed out. He was so cute. He also jumped 6'5" to give me a kiss, which I was not best pleased with, the little bastard. Because usually he only does it when I foolishly lean down to give him a stroke. Yeah. But no, he decided to jump up and give me a kiss this time.
Even I can't jump 6'5".
No. Little git. But yeah, he was a little slobber monster. He's as adorable as ever.
And what is this about UK Hunted being cancelled or ending?
Well, maybe. We don't know. There's been a theory for the past couple of years that UK Hunted may only go celebrity only because SAS Who Dares Wins, which also airs on Channel 4, did announce that they were doing that last year. And this series that literally finished releasing on Sunday filmed 2 years ago, and they've taken this long to actually air it, and there was no call for contestants at the end of the finale like there usually is. I think, given how strong the ratings have been, that there's a chance it will come back probably in a year or so. They seem to be doing every other year for civilians, so I think it will come back, just not next year.
Yeah. We haven't heard anything about the Australian one coming back, I don't think.
Sadly, that's already filmed. That was filmed a few weeks ago.
Boo.
Series 3, or Season 3. There are, you'll be pleased to know, lots of jokes in the Hunted UK podcast about how terrible Australian Hunted is.
Oh, good.
Because it's one of the rare shows that Anthony Williams gave up on.
Hmm.
By his own admission, he is a lot more tolerant of this bullshit than I am.
Why? What makes Australian Hunted so much worse?
Oh, God. The pacing and the editing, in summary. I've done many a rant on this topic, but I got 3 episodes into the first season of Australian Hunted before sacking it off because it was shite. And they're just really misleading with the timeline.
Oh, right. I remember a lot of jokes about that during the first season.
Yeah, I think the third episode is the one where it says on the screen that it's actually between days 7 and 10. And I worked out that it's actually between day 2 and 15. It's super misleading.
Yeah, that's not good to... Cause yeah, because that interferes with the integrity of the show.
Yeah, and it's just... We hate monkeying with the timeline at the best of times on the Hunted podcast, and it's just inherently misleading. I actually did take the UK Hunted editors to task a little bit for being very misleading in this series just gone. Far more misleading than they normally are. But yeah, Australian Hunted, it was just really incoherent and very Channel 10. Is the best way I can put it.
Like 90-minute episodes where nothing happens?
90-minute episodes where nothing happens, and also 3 episodes a week, which...
Oh, that, yeah. So how many episodes do they do then?
Too many.
Yeah, UK Hunted is a solid 6, and it's perfectly paced normally.
6 episodes, and they're like 70-minute episodes, right?
50. 40, it's about 42, I think, the finale was, something like that, after ads.
42 minutes of running time for the 6th and final episode, as opposed to Australian Hunted, which would have done, what, 80 minutes, probably 90 of running time?
Yeah.
Whew, and that's 12 episodes.
I seem to remember it was a shorter filming period as well. I think it might have been 21 days, which the UK one was this time as well, but UK traditionally is 25 to 28.
So UK Hunted films longer, they have fewer episodes, and each episode has less running time.
Yep.
That sounds like Australia to me.
Yep.
Yeah, it's three episodes a week, which this show does not work with pacing-wise anyway at the best of times, and then, yeah, shorter filming time and really badly edited.
In Australian Hunted, did they all just decide to all board the helicopter at the same time?
Unsurprisingly, it's limited to I think it's just Victoria. Correct me if I'm wrong,
yeah,
Bindles.
Yeah, no, that's right.
I think it's just Victoria they do on Australian Hunted.
But that's the only part you need.
Oh, just one province?
It's a limited bit of Victoria as well, so they can't just go to the back of beyond.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Victoria's about the same size as the whole of the UK, so...
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
As a general rule, the worldwide playing field is somewhere between about 90 and 110,000 square miles, which is roughly what the UK is. Because the American one was the same. It was a bit of Georgia, a bit of North Carolina, and somewhere else. I can't remember what the third state was, but it worked out to be pretty much the same size as the UK.
It's too bad the American version was only one season, which I still have to watch.
Yeah, the American one was really good. We actually said this on Hunted this week, that actually the American one was very underrated, because they did 8 episodes over 7 weeks, and that was perfect pacing for them, I would say. They did it in more the UK Series 1 style of introducing people and starting their hunt and being honest about it. But yeah, Australian was and is still very much a stinker. So final bit of this podcast admin is the fact that Fuzzy not only got bingo last week, she got a double line on bingo last week, which we must put a stop to.
Yeah.
Well, you already made a horse joke, Michael, so you already gave up one square.
You never know. We haven't done one for a few weeks. You might not put it on the board this week. But by my count, that makes it officially 6 wins, 7 losses this year so far, with the Vidim finale ambiguity still there.
I wonder if she's going to guess this week's correct and incorrect symbols.
I don't think she will.
No.
I also don't think she's going to get this week's Papa Virgil da Costa nickname, or indeed what the mole voice is going to end up being, because it is a delight. So previously, the Final 7 took a trip to the Mushroom Kingdom, where a counting fail for the Tower team saw Senna stop too early and cost them €500. When they headed to Castle Mola for a pizza-themed challenge, only 4 of them got to face the biggest insult known to Italian pizza, otherwise known as pineapple. At the execution, Coco tried to buy her way out of a red screen when the mole offered to hack the test, but she was exposed by the group and became the 4th person sent home. And we begin in Vilvorda 6 months ago. All of them are told that their loved ones will not be of their choice, but instead will be their mothers. Senna says his girlfriend will be disappointed, and Mikhail says they're all going to suffer because of the existence of his mother. It's Mum's Week, like I said. This is perfectly timed. I feel like we're being pandered to having this episode be recorded on my mother's birthday.
The irony is I feel like Mikhail's mother was the least chaotic of them.
Yeah, she definitely was on her best behaviour. Everyone else, not so much. And the episode title is I Am Not Your Mother, from Yasmin, who is Senna's mother.
That's quite the revelation to have on Belgian Mole, for Senna to find out that's not his mom.
Yeah.
He's been living a lie his whole life.
So after 10 days around Catania, it's time to move. Mikael tells a story from his past about how he worked in a bakery for 8 years and found out that he gets very sick sitting in the back of a car. And they're on their way to Segesta, which is famous from Amazing Race 9.
Yeah, that was the first thing I put in my notes with, was the amphitheater. That's definitely the mannequin challenge from season 9.
Yeah, Bindles and I were trying to work out last week when we saw the preview whether that was Segesta or not.
Turns out it is. I hear the batteries are remarkable.
It doesn't fit.
Gilles meets them in the amphitheater. Today they will be honouring the Greeks with a trip to the beautiful temple of Segesta, a trip full of torments and trials. The good news is that they will be helped by Hercules, and if everyone makes it on time, it's worth 3,000 euros, unless Senna decides to double it. And he chooses not to. They have until the two pillars of Hercules fall to reach the temple, which is currently about 30 minutes, and two of them can help Hercules by taking over the slack, which is Senna and Mikael.
Two tickets to the gun show, please.
How did I know that you would approve of Mikael flexing?
Wonder if this challenge was discarded from the Greece season as like an extra challenge that they thought, maybe we'll use a variation of this down the road.
I was having this very discussion with my brother on the drive down to Mum and Dad's today, because we do occasionally discuss Mole, even though he doesn't watch it. And I was saying that it feels like some of these challenges may have been alternates from the Greece season, which, lest we forget, had a lot of Greek myth-themed challenges. But this just reinforces the link that we've talked about before of this season and Greece. We obviously had the Pandora's Box return, but now we have the blatant reminder that actually Sicily was in part discovered by the Greeks, or at least colonized by the Greeks.
And my dad watches a lot. He always watches the World's Strongest Man contest every single year for the past 40 years or so. So this Hercules hold is used every single year when they do that contest.
Something I do have to point out, which I've talked to Bindles about earlier, is there is a potential clue for Mikael right at the start of this challenge. And that's the fact that he's the only one who is in workout gear. It feels like he knew something like this was coming and wanted to get into a position to pass or fail this challenge for the team. He's in full running gear.
Wouldn't you observe what everyone else is wearing to not tip them off, though? That seems like a bit, that seems sloppy.
Because, like, Stephanie was wearing denim shorts. Stephanie was not dressed to do any sort of exercise, I would say. Mikael very much was. He was wearing proper running shorts and everything.
It's funny, because when you message me saying, oh, there's a clue to Mikael at the start, I'm like, was it the oversized ball?
It was not the return of the Mega Ball, no.
It's a torment. Okay, it's a torment in this situation.
I mean, you got to feel bad for Mikael if his one lone Mega Ball does weigh 40 kilos.
It's so heavy, it needs to be transported by two people.
And has various Flemish words written on it. So the remaining four will face the other trials, and Jill also mentions that the stakes may change along the way. The first task is the cruel Sisyphean eight-shaped floor for two candidates. They must stay behind and can only continue on the journey once the torment has been sufficiently endured. They choose Bernard and Stephanie, who must roll a ball up a hill. Along the way, there are three questions, and if they get it wrong, they have to roll the 40-kilo ball all the way back down.
And then roll it back up again.
Yep. And the first question is what a single strand of spaghetti is called, and they have all the options written on the ball, they just have to find them. Would you guys have known this one?
I probably would have been able to puzzle it out just because of how the Italian language works with, you know, things like gelati and gelato and graffiti and graffito and all that sort of stuff. This one I would have been fine with. I knew the Carpaccio one, but I wouldn't have got the Greek name for Italy.
No. That's pretty much my argument, is that the first question is very much easy if you have any sort of knowledge of Italian. Yeah. Because it's a very common thing that singular is ending in O, multiple is ending in I.
Yep.
The Carpaccio one, once you work out what the four source options are, I think you probably go for Worcester as the first one.
Yeah.
The Greek name for Italy is by far the toughest of the three.
Yeah.
That would have taken me two guesses.
So they go for Spaghetto, which is the correct answer. And Lynn and Charlotte are the other two, and they find the Torment of the Danaids, which Lynn knows is that they try to fill a barrel, but it never stopped losing water. They must fill a barrel until water pours from a tap, and there are loads of plugs in the barrel which they must use to plug the holes.
Given that Italy is a predominantly Catholic country, I'm not surprised that it involves holy water.
Not where I thought that joke was going to go.
What were you thinking of? What was the alternative?
I don't know. I just thought the worst. I expected the worst of you.
You just didn't expect a clean joke for once?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that was... We can actually air that on the podcast. Okay. Moving on.
Do you even know us, Michael?
That one is actually under the Michelle Pierce Denovan threshold of dirty jokes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That could be told in front of Michelle. And doesn't get it. Michael, remove that from the podcast.
Do you think it would have been smarter for them to plug all the holes before they started filling it with water?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, I was surprised that they both weren't plugging holes.
Especially when we get to the giant ladle where Charlotte ends up waterboarding Lynn. And spoilers, if Lynn hadn't already got two banners in a row, that would have been a contender for the banner this week. So the second question is that there is a theory that the name Italy comes from the Greek Italos, but what does it mean? They pick green and are wrong and have to carry the 40 kilo ball all the way back down the hill.
That would have been my last guess. Green?
That's the toughest question of the three because it actually requires you to know Greek.
Yeah, but I feel like you would just know what the mindset and what would be in everyone's vocabulary at the time when they see land. They're not going to say green.
No, if it was something to do with green, it would be a basis of like verdant or something similar to that. I know that Greek isn't necessarily mutually intelligible with a lot of Romance languages, but there's some common basis for a lot of these sort of words. And yeah, you'd be looking for something along the lines of verdant if it was going to be green. Susanna and Mikhail find the final torment, which is the Torment of the Mole. They can hear a conversation that Gilles had with the mole pre-season, with some information missing. The information appears on the screen, but they mustn't look. Every candidate who resists looking at the screen raises the stakes by 500 euros, but everyone who does look reduces them by 500 euros. Can I point out, that does mean that this challenge could have been worth 12,000 euros, Senna.
Yeah, all as long as everyone followed Paul Anka's guarantee. But the guarantee is void in Tennessee.
Do you think there was anything worthwhile in the briefing that could have been helpful? Or do you think it was just wasting time?
Well, fundamentally, it was wasting time. But if you didn't know who the mole was and if you weren't on a track, then you can kind of get into the mindset of the mole with a lot of these answers.
Like with speech pattern, vocabulary usage, the speech pentameter?
Having said that, a lot of the things that the mole said they were going to do point to a different person each time. Maybe with the exception of Lynn, who none of us really ever suspected, I would say. You could pretty much pin any of the other five on being the mole from this conversation, I would say.
Yeah.
The conversation gets funnier towards the end, but I wish it was just the most irrelevant babble possible, like the mole rants about the new Space Jam movie or something like that. I took my niece to see the new Space Jam with LeBron James. It was horrible. It was nothing like the original.
It made me want to cut out my other ball.
That reminds me, I have a CD by the Quad City DJs.
So the conversation goes as follows. Hello, Mole.
Hello, Shill, or should he call you Paparoni?
Maybe start right away with something you could lose a lot of money with.
Yes, I know what you mean. Pandora's box.
Risky, but it would be amazing if it works.
It is simple. If you get the chance, that box will definitely open.
The best thing is, of course, no one will hear me having done that in a Darth Vader voice. Stephanie and Bernard then get the second question wrong again and go for boot. It is wrong. They go for field and are also wrong, meaning that it is calf.
Four trips.
Mm.
That is very, very moly.
Four trips in the heat. Up and down a very steep hill.
They really did make a mound out of a molehill this time.
Oh-ho. Mikhail and Senna then get to the temple without having been tempted by the mole, and with 5 minutes remaining on Hercules' time. Charlotte finds a sign saying they can exchange their ladle for a bigger one, but they must take a time penalty of a minute for every bigger ladle they pick. She swaps immediately for the largest one, which will cost them 2 minutes. Stephanie and Bernard then find the final question, which is in Carpaccio. There is a sauce. Which sauce? And they go for puttanesca, which is incorrect. And it's almost certainly going to have been Worcester, is what I said at the time.
Yeah.
I was pretty confident it'd be Worcester.
I think puttanesca is supposed to be your successor in Russia if anything happens to Putin.
I'm assuming you know the origin of puttanesca, Saunders.
He was there.
No.
Puta, as you may know from our dear friend Coco.
Coco, yeah. I was thinking that thought crossed my mind, but I thought, no, it can't be.
It means prostitute. Traditionally, puttanesca was apparently from the brothels.
The brothels in Brussels?
So it literally does actually mean basically pastor of the whores.
Hmm. Horse or...
No, don't get turned on, Saunders. We're talking about the thing that, in theory, should turn you on, not the thing that actually does. May have deliberately worded it that way just to bait you into saying it. But yeah, not a lot of people know that Worcester sauce actually also is fish-based. It contains anchovies.
Mm.
The main way that I surprise people with that is if you think back to the before and after round that I did during episode 500, one of those that I did on a work quiz was this 80s band, famous for songs including Girls on Film and Rio, is also the main fish in Worcester sauce, which would be Duran Duran anchovies.
Jeez.
I was quite proud of that one when I wrote it, but I remember some of the shocked reactions when I did that one at work, just being like, I didn't know Worcester sauce contained anchovies. And I'm like, yeah, have a look at the label. Mm. Have a look at a bottle of Liam Parent's. You'll see it does contain anchovies. So Senna takes over from Hercules. He will hold the columns until he can't take it any longer, and each candidate can only hold the columns once. Every 3 minutes, Hercules will make it harder by adding a 5 kilo weight to each column. The Danaids complete their challenge and head towards the Mole's Torment after, you know, Lynn gets a rather large ladle full of water to her face. Bernard and Stephanie then get the correct sauce and complete their torment too, and they are absolutely shattered. Lynn and Charlotte then reach the Mole's Torment. Okay, next, the Arpe cars and the bomb. What are you going to do?
If he could use the double there, then he will do that.
And if you're in an Arpe?
Steering the discussion in the wrong direction by acting nervous.
And the ice creams, is everything clear there?
When I'm at the screen, he will give wrong commands, as no one can see that I'm sabotaging.
There you go, that's it. Little bit of fill in the blanks from after the challenge there, but it works. And Senna endures 12 minutes before Mikhail gets ready. He takes over as the columns reach 20k. And those who complete the Mole's Torment can also take over if needs be. Bernard and Stephanie then reach the Mole's Torment.
Can he also sabotage you a bit now?
Now? What do you mean?
The longer he talked to you, the more time they lose in the Hercules journey.
Ah yes, that's true. You're actually life sabotaging the Hercules journey now.
It does not really matter what he say. He just have to keep babbling and stretch. The... time.
This is going to be really weird in the funny voice this week.
Yeah, I know. The funny voice is ridiculous this week, Saunders. I sent Bindles a clip of it earlier. I do feel a little bit like they're pandering to us having so much voice of them all at this point. This entire challenge is basically just Jill trying to make me do the Darth Vader voice so much.
I'm surprised at the end of it, the mole doesn't say, now let's sing Comma Chameleon for the next 2 minutes.
Comma, 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 chameleon. You come and go. You come and go.
Now we will sing Careless Whisper by George Michael.
I feel so unsure. As I take your hand, I walk you to the dance floor.
And then you hear Mikhail and Sen in the background saying, Jesus Christ, there's nothing of value in here. It's just the mole singing Careless Whisper by George Michael. We can't hold on to these pillars any longer. We haven't turned any money for weeks.
I'm going to get banned from this terrible AI site at this rate.
And then you hear in the back, further in the background, you're just going, now do Macarena.
Or given that it's filmed in Europe, we just hear, step inside the eye of your mind. You know you might find.
Yeah. Every country. Every country.
So Mikhail really struggles as Lynn and Charlotte make the end, but the pillars slip as they get there, 48 minutes into the challenge. And that means that they earn nothing of 6,000 euros for the challenge, and both Bernard and Stephanie looked, which would have dropped it to 4,000.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether they looked or not.
Nope. The torment ends with one more thing. Tell me your name.
My name is what? My name is who?
Yeah, I wrote the same thing in my notes. I wrote my name is Ticka Ticka Slip Shady.
The funny thing is, I have in my notes that I thought the M&M reference you were going to make this week was Mum's Spaghetti.
Nope, that's way too obvious.
My name is Shkashka Slim Shady. My name is... No, I'm not going to do that.
And Jill then promises to make it up to them with some comfort food. Bernard admits in the car that he looked, and Senna correctly links comfort food with a hint to their mothers coming to Sicily.
I'm mostly sad Jill didn't turn up to the challenge dressed as Zeus.
Yeah.
Did we end up agreeing on a nickname for him this week?
Yeah, I thought we were going to go with Supapa Madre. Because that was the one that made me laugh the most this week.
Okay. I did like the backup option of Europapa. It was basically either that or Papa Sidon.
God of the sea. When he's on the yacht, he's the god of the sea.
Yeah, I liked Papa Sidon actually as well. I forgot about that one.
Although, the running joke this season of Jules being like, you sucked, let's eat some food, is sort of the sort of running joke that, like, if it keeps going, we're going to have to start calling him Jilly Wonka.
There's no place I know. I can't wait to see the Papoopa Loompas.
Oompa Loompa.
Oh no, not this again.
You should have introduced every challenge with like Oompa Loompa Doompity Do. He's got another challenge for you.
Oompa Loompa Doompity Do. So they drive to the Sirigiano wine estate, their new accommodation. Everyone gets Prosecco apart from Stephanie, who apparently has some ridiculous allergies, and this is the first time they've mentioned it in the episodes.
I wonder what her allergy is.
Well, one of the main theories that Stephanie might be the mole, pre-season at least, is because she has that many allergies to pretty much everything in Italy, food-wise, that it wouldn't make any sense to bring her to Italy otherwise. Because I think she's lactose intolerant and celiac as well, if I remember rightly. She basically can't have any Italian food.
Hmm. She's on the wrong season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So behind Jill are six plates of bolognese made by six different chefs, otherwise known as their mothers. Unfortunately, Stephanie's mum's sick, so her sister has come instead.
Maybe her mum has had an allergic reaction to something. Maybe they practiced making the pasta at home and she's like, oh, allergic reaction, can't go.
And all they've got to do is identify their loved one's spaghetti bolognese. And if they are all sitting in the right seats, they will win 2,000 euros. Or maybe 4,000 euros if Senna doubles it, which he can't do as he hasn't got them with him.
He had one job. He had one job and Senna screwed it up just like Charlotte did. What the hell, man?
If only we knew what brand of tomato sauce they were using.
Yeah, the worrying thing here is that is not the least subtle sponsorship in this episode. No. By a long shot. There is an Amazing Race Canada level one coming very soon. By emptying her glass first, Stephanie and Lynn will be the first pair, followed by Charlotte and Bernard, and then Senna and Mikhail. They have 1 minute each to identify their dish, based only on appearance. Bernard says he's been training his wife for 12 years to replicate his mum's spaghetti. He's winning points with his mother, but not his wife. So they all make their choices. Either they will have a cozy dinner with their mothers, or it will turn into a date with a woman that they don't know.
Which is going to be really awkward when Mikhail cooks his mother vongole.
That is very true. Do you want to do that joke or not? It's up to you.
Yeah, let me get back into the chapter. Because I deleted it because I was that worried about it.
3 minutes of scrolling later.
Mikhail mentions he cooks vongole, clams, for his wife and narrowly avoids saying on national television that he does it so she opens hers.
Oh.
Yeah, keep it or delete it.
Let's keep it. It's funny.
I was expecting something just outright offensive.
With or without the 4 minutes of scrolling on Facebook.
Yeah. Just replace it with the Mole's grocery list. So, a dozen eggs, an apple, some carrots. Do I need paper towel? I don't know.
I need to go to Costco. They do the best pizza and hot dogs.
But I don't have a membership card, so I'll have to buy one when I get there. Damn it! When is he going to give us any information? Senna's still holding up the pillars while I'm listening to this bullshit.
Do tree surgeon and social worker count as trades for the Costco cards? Fun fact, yes is the answer.
Yeah.
As someone who goes to Costco. So Lynn, Charlotte, Mikhail, and Stephanie are all right, but despite knowing his mother's spaghetti a mile off, Bernard made a mistake and him and Senna are both wrong, meaning they earn, again, no Euros of 2000 for the challenge.
I like how the editors went all in on Bernard being really confident that he'd be, that out of everybody, he would be most certain what his mom's spaghetti was like, and yet he's the one person who screwed up in the challenge.
Yeah.
I hope next week when they do the opening credits, they stick that shot of Senna's mum posing in them.
They should do. She was a delight.
Just do like all of the other ones and then just randomly Senna's mum just posing and then just like the graphic that says Yasmin, Senna's mum, just while she does that posy look to camera thing.
Well, I was thinking about this when I first got a whiff on Sunday morning of it not being a family visit, it being a mother's visit. It's hard mode for the mole, really, because I don't know what your mother's like, but Logan's met my mother. Yeah. You cannot keep a secret from my mother. If I was the mole and my mum came as the loved one, she would suss it out very quickly.
Yeah.
I like how multiple moms said, yeah, I think you're the mole.
Yeah. It's interesting because five of them, well, not Stephanie because her mum wasn't there, but, you know, four of the people whose mums were there were shown telling their mum they're not the mole. Mikhail was not. Mikhail just sort of turned at her and gave her that, you know, don't be stupid look. But he never actually denies it.
Yeah, we were chatting about this earlier in that it's a tradition for the family visits of all loved ones to say, so are you the mole? And everyone says no. And it's never been a clue. Despite being a tradition, what, 9 seasons into this reboot, it's never been a clue before. And it would really wrong for us if they sneak a clue past us in this scene, it being such a tradition at this point.
Past us?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, Saunders.
There is a this fucking show moment in this challenge.
Yeah, I wrote it in here too.
Which one was that?
Well, let's hear which one Logan thinks it was first.
It's better if we get to that specific situation, because it's more of a dialogue thing.
Okay, so there's the thing with Bernard's mum making him cry about his kid missing him. And then sort of in the background, you hear like a piano rendition of the Itsy Bitsy Spider. If you sort of sing it along with it, he sort of stops crying right as soon as it gets to the bit where it's like dries up all the rain. And I heard it and I'm like, you know, humming along. And I'm like, oh, this fucking show.
That's so clever and so sneaky.
That's like Arrested Development levels of cleverness.
I did think that when you guys were wondering about whether you'd matched on the this fucking show, whether we were just going to go straight into the third challenge and one of you was going to act as the mother here and try and match your answers.
I like how Lynn's mom thinks that Lynn is the mole, despite Lynn being the only person who refuses to be the mole this season.
Yeah, Lynn is literally the least moley person in this season.
And then Stephanie's sister, just how much of an over-the-top reaction she has to seeing Stephanie's tattoo. I'm thinking, it's like the smallest tattoo on her foot. Why is she reacting like that? Was she planning on taking Stephanie to a Japanese onsen? Like, why that intensive a reaction?
I will say this now, and we didn't discuss it at the time of the tattoo challenge, but I hope it isn't Stephanie and that isn't a clue, because it's too basic bullshit for this show. If it's just, see, I told you, I was the mole all the time.
And then Lynn points out her bruise to her mom, saying, I have a huge bruise, and then Nicole immediately says, what have you done with my child? And I was thinking, they should have piped in the Godfather, they killed my boy, what have they done with my boy, they killed my boy. But they did not go that route.
I don't think we've ever actually discussed this on the podcast. Who would be your loved one if you got a choice?
Well, not any of my actual relatives. Best friend, maybe?
Yeah, Kim's my best friend, so yeah, she'd be, yeah. I think she'd be coming out. I was thinking more of that with the Wendy's visit in Big Brother Canada.
Because I was thinking about this from a personal point of view. I think it would be really, really, really funny if I turned around to the producers, if I was the mole or whatever, and said, yeah, I want one of my podcast co-hosts to be my quote-unquote loved one on the mole, because if I'm the mole and I sneak it past them, it's going to be way funnier. They're going to do the entire season of recaps just going, I don't think he can be the mole because, you know, I did the family visit and he convinced me. And then it's revealed. It would make it even funnier, I think, the reveal.
You are going to have to fly my loved one in from Manchester, though.
Yeah, you are going to have to fly my loved ones in from Melbourne and I mean, he can get to Kelowna. We'll make him go. We'll make him get to Kelowna, at least.
As long as he doesn't have to go to Seattle.
Or Calgary.
Yeah, avoid those two cities.
I do think Ant would get the hump if he wasn't included in that list as well, to be honest. If he found out I was on the mole and didn't invite him to the set, I think he'd be a bit pissed off with me.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to talk about with the mother's visit?
Just that they all overpacked for a weekend in Italy.
Was it Stephanie's sister packed 20 kilos?
I'm like, you're going to be there for, what, 3 days at most?
The only reason they could pack 20 kilos is thanks to Chewie's generous baggage allowance. Did you pick up on the subtle implication that this family visit might have been sponsored by Chewie?
No way.
What?
I mean, it was really subtle. You had to really look for it. They weren't in a Chewie-branded coach. They certainly didn't have a Chewie rep putting them on the coach for no discernible reason.
I thought it was sponsored by Bernard's mother's water company.
Yeah.
I love how that's the one family story we get at breakfast, is just Bernard's mum going, yeah, he used to take these really long showers, and as soon as he left home, my water bill dropped by a third. Yeah. And I'm just there going, yeah, have a think about why he might have been taking long showers.
Yeah.
I don't think he was doing much cleaning. At best, you'd hope he'd put his phone on a waterproof shelf and was watching something like one of my friends does. So they all get a subtly branded Chewie coach on day 12 to Poggio Reale for the final challenge of the episode. In 1968, there was a severe earthquake, leaving the town looking as it does today.
That was also the Mexico City Olympics, 1968.
And how did you know that?
I don't know. Some Dutch people told me.
But luckily, this challenge is worth an actual amount of money.
It is. And not 1968 euros, which Senna could potentially double.
Could you imagine?
I would have blown a gasket if they'd done that in Vidim this year. So today they are also going back in time, but to their childhoods. The challenge is worth up to €4,500, but Senna's mum is in charge of the doubler and decides to play it.
Senna's mom is better at the mole than everyone else in the cast.
Well, you say that, it still didn't earn them any money.
But still, Senna could have easily forgotten it or said, no, I'm not going to use it.
They'll be building block towers with their mothers, and for the three pairs with the highest towers, there will be a potential dessert, a dolce, if you will.
Molce.
There we go, I was waiting for a reference to Dolce Goosen or anything similar.
They're in Italy, it's Molce and Gabbana.
Ah, good point. It will be played in three rounds, and at the end of each round, whichever pair has the smallest tower is out. How do you think you would have done with building the towers?
I would have been so bad. Like, I would have done the Survivor thing where, you know, you try and make it as tall as it can be, and then it doesn't stand on its own even before the earthquake.
Nobody did the correct tactic here, which is, especially after the first round, you look how the table vibrates, and you build it at a right angle to the way it vibrates. So if it's vibrating left to right, you build the tower stability wise front to back.
Yeah.
And then it won't die. It was very stupid building from pretty much everyone. I didn't see anyone who did a build it front to back tactic as soon as they saw the tables vibrate. It's understandable in round one, but it's not understandable in rounds two and three.
I guess just in the midst of the challenge, that thought didn't cross their mind.
So each round they've just got to build their towers on a table. However, before the towers would get measured, there will be an earthquake, and the tables will vibrate. They can also search the town and earn extra blocks by answering a childhood question. If they match with their mother's or sister, they will earn the blocks that they've found. The first question is when their child or sister's first kiss was, either before 15, between 15 and 17, or after 17.
I wish the numbers would just keep going up. After 33, after 35, after 42.
Well, nobody would have picked after 42, because Mikhail's still the oldest in the cast now at 41.
Yeah.
They just had to guess when Supapa Madre's first kiss was.
And each correct answer is also worth €600 for the stakes, and the candidates must fish their answers from the fountain. Charlotte and Lynn fail in this round to fish an answer out, and only Senna and his mother match, meaning €600 for the stakes, and only they can keep building.
The funniest part for me, because Charlotte misses, but her mom still answered, and her mom answered incorrectly, then Charlotte yells, "You literally saw it happen! William Raymaker's in the parking lot with me." And I'm just picturing, like, they should have cut to Raymaker's, like, him and his wife on the couch watching the episode, him going, "This fucking show.
I've been exposed."
The funniest bit for me is, like, all of the mothers who are wrong guess older than the actual answer.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
Where Senna's mum is basically like, "Yeah, you're a slut, it's going to be under 50. And it's the only reason she's right.
We got a very good picture of Senna, especially, but also Charlotte in this challenge. Because Senna would go for the most extreme answer in every single option. See also the fact that he stole something larger than a lemon.
I love the implication of that question being like, you would never steal a lemon on its own. It's either larger or smaller. It's never the exact size of a lemon.
What would they have done if someone had stolen a lemon? Would it have gone to like, oh, it was a Sicilian lemon, so it was massive?
Yeah.
Also, fun fact, on my trip to Costco a couple of weeks ago, they genuinely were selling Sicilian lemon trees.
Oh. Does the Costco pizza have pineapple on it?
I don't think it does, actually. I think the options are four cheese or pepperoni, in the UK at least. Also, fun fact, Sicilian lemon trees will die in the UK climate, unless they're in a greenhouse. Because we genuinely did look it up.
Yeah, man, Chan would be so disappointed.
So the earthquakes begin, and Bernard is the first one eliminated with a tower of 8.6 centimetres. The second round question is whether their loved one has stolen anything. Yes, smaller than a lemon, larger than a lemon, or no. Stephanie's the only one to fail to fish a letter, and Senna and Charlotte match with their mothers. Lynn once stole a bottle of booze, Senna stole some bread, and she only found out about it when she read it in the newspaper. And Charlotte stole some orange juice and had a night in the cells.
I love that it's like, yeah, Charlotte's been to prison for hers. Senna's been in the newspaper. Which one of those is a bigger punishment? I have a question for you. Smaller than a lemon or larger than a lemon? Because I don't think there's any chance neither of you have never stolen.
What do you mean by that? Cheeky fuck.
Because I know you.
I honestly can't think of anything I've stolen.
Huh.
I'm trying to think if there is something that I just...
Actually, there is one thing. The internet's hearts when I was on the chase.
Oh. So smaller than a lemon.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised we didn't get the answer from Mikhail whether it was smaller or bigger than a lemon. I think we know it's 40 kilos at this point, don't we?
Well, I guess this episode that I watched, I guess that's technically theft.
Yeah. I must also point out, your "you wouldn't steal a lemon" meme did really make me laugh, Bindles. Because it's such a niche reference.
Do you know what the reference actually is?
Well, I was going to say, did you even have those adverts before your videos in Australia?
Yeah, they were the Australian DVD piracy things.
Yeah, they were the British ones as well. Oh. "You wouldn't steal a car, etc."
Yeah.
I wasn't sure whether you were actually aware of it from the UK or whether it was an Australian thing as well.
I think it was originally Australian and then the UK ended up taking it.
I wouldn't be surprised.
So, you know, the UK has stolen something larger than a lemon.
There is a small degree of irony in the UK stealing a piracy campaign.
And apparently, I can't remember where I remember reading a few months ago, the music for that little video clip or whatever, that was stolen.
And also, for the record, I think I can speak for the three of us when I say I would download a car if it was available.
Yeah.
Actually, there is somebody who has stolen a lemon on the mole. Season 5 of the US version. Clay steals Paul's sour lemon and throws it at his face.
Yeah, good point. Forgot about that.
So same as a lemon would have had to be an option. This was season 5 of the US Mall.
I also love how Saunders couldn't contribute to the you wouldn't steal a lemon conversation because that definitely didn't make it to Canada. VHS has barely made it to Canada.
Yeah, the piracy, anti-piracy warning is just all grainy and snowy.
If you're aware of the musical Little Shop of Horrors, when Audrey sings about watching stuff on a big, enormous 12-inch screen, that's basically set in Canada.
Mm. Well, I mean, Rick Moranis, I believe, is Canadian.
So the final question is when the first time they were drunk was, before 15, between 15 and 17, or after 17, and only Mikhail doesn't match with his mother, adding another 1,800 euros to the stakes.
Did you notice something weird going on with that? So Mikhail and his mother basically argue over whether 15 is under 15 or between 15 and 17, except he's holding the C, which was over 17.
Yeah, I didn't spot that. So the final earthquake eliminates Charlotte by a millimeter, and for the final round, the three remaining candidates get to pick their desserts. If they pick the same gift as their loved ones, they will win it, and if all three of them make the same choice as their loved ones, they will also get the 3,600 euros that they've earned as a stake. Their choice? One pass frog or a pampering weekend at a 5-star hotel and eating in a 2 Michelin star restaurant in Amsterdam. What would you have picked?
I mean, you take the Joker and then take your mother on a holiday after the season. Like, you just pay for it.
I think Senna's argument is correct. One pass frog is not enough for the equivalent of 1,200 euros. But I think this is mainly suspicious behaviour from Senna of his mother knowing how competitive he is and then him still prioritizing her.
It did feel out of place. It's just within the confines of the game. Everyone would know without communicating. You just have to go with the pass frog.
Yeah.
Even if you've realized, wait a second, that trip to Amsterdam is equivalent to how much we have in the pot right now.
So Stephanie and her sister both pick pass frog. Mikhail and his mother also pick pass frog, but Senna picked the weekend away, thinking one pass frog was too little, meaning they earn nothing of 9,000 euros for the challenge, nothing of 17,000 for the episode, and 11,140 of 69,300 for the season so far.
Nice.
I knew you'd comment on that number. And Jill also announces that the loved ones are going home now, and one of them will be on the plane too, as it's time to say goodbye to another person. It's now time for the test. 20 questions about the identity and actions of the mole. Whoever knows least goes home except for the mole who can never go home. Mikhail and Stephanie both have a pass frog to play on this test. Bernard said that they seem to be on track for a nice sum with the 3,600 euros, but then one person goes for a weekend trip and ruins it all. Charlotte says a mother would always know to pick pass frogging. Lynn thinks it will come down to pass frogging now. Senna told his mum he was going all in, so one pass frogging wouldn't be enough to save him if he's wrong anyway. Mikhail says Bernard made the biggest mistake in the spaghetti challenge. Charlotte says it's odd that a tree surgeon could only stand for 5 minutes, and Senna's also suspicious of that. And Stephanie says Bernard went for all the wrong answers on the Sisyphean task, which burned far too much time. Jill says that if you take one look at their efforts this week, you see that the mole is definitely winning, and another doubler is burned, only one remains, and Senna wills it to Lynn.
The one person who everyone has probably ruled out as the mole at this point, or for a while, so you know that there's a chance that she could be executed, you think you'd want to give it to the person who you think might be the mole, because they'd be safe from execution.
Yeah, and also, this is the first execution where the mole has come back from seeing everyone's answers last week. So if Senna is the mole, he knows that Lynn is probably the furthest away from his identity. So maybe that's why he gave Lynn the doubler.
Senna did climb up my suspicions this week.
I know I was toying last week with whether I suspect Mikhail or Senna more, and I did end up plumping for Mikhail in both the suspect list and our suspicions. Senna definitely did some interesting stuff this week. Whether it was a bit too blatant, I don't know. So she immediately gets a red screen, as you might have guessed, and for the second week on the trot, it's one screen that we see, and it's only a red one.
She gone!
She gone indeed. And she says that she was still spreading over three people and has been misled by a very good mole for the last 3 days. Charlotte says she looks up to her, she feels shitty about Lynn going home. She's very sincere and honest in what she says and does. The castle challenge was her highlight, she knew so much about Italian laws, and obviously, included in her montage, is her asking two Italian men for a quickie.
I wish, because they had Charlotte say, oh, Lynn is truly a fucking awesome woman. I wish it would have gone more with the mole theme of this fucking woman. That would have been a lot better.
Well, that's the thing. Papa Bear is very much aware of the catch-all phrase, this fucking show now. I want it as a reference in this show at some point. The screen wakes up again with a message from the mole saying,
hello, friends. You survived another elimination, but I see doubt in your eyes. Despite all the suspicions and all the talk, so pay close attention. Tomorrow, I will let one of you hear my real voice. Sleep tight.
And that's where the episode ends.
XOXO kisses.
Now let's sing Macarena.
Coming out of my cage, and I'm feeling just fine.
Why is Mr. Brightside?
It's another song that you always say you hear touring around Europe.
Oh yeah, that is true. That and Careless Whisper and Wonderwall by Oasis. That is true.
It's an unofficial British anthem. Even though the Killers are very much from Vegas.
Now that the doublers are out of way and Lynn's got the souvenir, which, firstly, oh, so you do have souvenirs now.
Yes, exactly. Souvenirs will become a point if anyone from production is listening. We haven't forgotten that Papa Bear promised us some souvenirs when he spoke to us in 2021.
Now that the doublers are out of play, do you think it was worth it this season? Because nothing came of them. But does a twist have to have a tangible result to be worth it?
Not on this show, I would say. It was a very fun thing to hinge the season on.
Yeah.
But I'm glad in a way that someone has gone home with the doublers in the pocket just because it's the natural conclusion.
Mm.
I think if they'd just all been played, it would have been more underwhelming than this ends up being. Because now you have the story for the last three episodes of, but what if Senna didn't give Lynn that last doubler?
You know, just watch a challenge next week be worth like 7,000 euros or something.
Well, exactly. That's what I mean. I think I said it a few weeks ago that there's a very strong chance that one of the final challenges in a few weeks' time is going to be worth like 10 grand and Jill's going to turn around and go, bet you wish you had a doubler now, don't you fuckers?
Yeah.
You'll say that verbatim.
He would.
I would love it so much if Jill just turns around in the finale and just goes, bet you wish you had a doubler now, fuckers.
Yeah, like they didn't make any money at all with the doublers, but it was a good addition to the season. And like the layers of strategy that it added to the game, I think, justified it.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see if they take their foot off the gas with regards to all or nothing challenges now that they're out. Because that's the major complaint I've seen for this season so far, is the fact that obviously a lot of the challenges have been all or nothing because of the impact of the doublers. And they don't want to give away that much money, really. But I think it'll be interesting to see whether there's going to be some more, you can earn a bit of the maximum challenges from next week onwards, now that Lynn's gone home with the souvenir.
I think if they weren't playing for the doublers, I think maybe the Earthquake Challenge, the prize would have been split up into three for that final round. Because it was 300 at the start, so it would have just been 100 per person. So,
yeah, I was thinking, yeah, you don't need a twist to fully come into play during a season. That's more of a survivor mindset. I don't mind twists being implemented where, because it's not like it was a complete swing and a miss this season. It's just that the cast didn't directly benefit from it, but it still impacted how they played. People still had to pick who gets the doubler. You still had the mole trying to get the doubler to somebody who they suspected would be executed next. And for all we know, that's what happened this round.
It was a better season-long twist than sticking Gillian in a box and just bringing him back in episode 5.
Yeah. It's better than basically anything Vidim's done for years in terms of twists.
It reminds me on Survivor how, somebody gets sorted out with an idol in their pocket, it always gets re-hidden. That became a thing after they had the idol in, well, they initially had it, then they stopped doing that, and then, what was it, season 19 is when they started doing it, where, okay, if an idol gets played or fleshed out, you have to re-hide it no matter what. So they're just forcing that item to always be in circulation. I like it much better, like here what we have with the doubler, where they can all be wiped out if somebody gets executed in episode 2 or episode 3, or maybe the twist makes it all the way to the end. Maybe it gets used effectively. Maybe it all goes to waste. I like that much more because I used to host online Survivor games about 10 years ago or so. And I always had the idols that way, where it was just three for the whole season. If somebody goes home with an idol or it gets played, it doesn't get rehidden. And I had other twists that I had each season, or little advantages that either didn't get found or didn't get played at all. And I didn't think, oh man, that was a complete dud of a twist that I had planned. I never really think of it that way. It still has its impact, even if it's not outright obvious or has as much data attached to it or doesn't create that big moment on screen.
I think we've touched upon this before, but part of the reason why this show works so well is that the production team have a lot of faith in the product and a lot of faith in just the show working itself. And even if a twist bombs, as I don't think the Doublers really bombed, I think they had the exact desired effect that production wanted. But even if it's a potentially underwhelming twist, production still has enough faith in the show itself that it's not that big a problem.
Look at Pandora's Box.
Exactly, that's what I mean. If you look at the litany of temptations that people have resisted on this show, an American production probably would have gone, shit, this is a nightmare that this was never won. This was never played and we never actually got to use it properly. Belgian production just goes, yeah, it happens, but we can always bring it back. We can always tweak it and add it to something else. They're a lot less stressed when things go wrong, maybe with the exception of Canary Islands, which was a nightmare scenario for them. I don't think that they get as stressed and pissed off when stuff doesn't necessarily go their way, which helps.
And one thing to note with Dutch Mole, they've had a lot of twists where they introduce a twist, but then it truly goes nowhere, or in some cases it doesn't even get picked. They pointed out at the start of the season, oh, there could be a black exemption. Oh, nobody found a black exemption. Things like that, or just minor twists that Dutch Mole does that even that it gets talked about, but it really has no impact on the season whatsoever. That would be more of a dud twist, because it's just such a minor thing that people say, well, it's not even a talking point. Why was this part of the game in the first place?
I mean, the best example of that is the black exemptions in Oregon, which were hidden in the claw machine and then never hidden for the rest of the season. They were not best pleased that those black exemptions didn't come into play and nobody even looked at that claw machine, to the point where they very much reintroduced the black exemption a few times in Georgia to compensate. I think Dutch production is very much more American style in that if a twist doesn't go their way, they go, ah, shite. Whereas if it happens in Belgium, they go, yeah, we got contingencies, we can make it work, don't matter. As long as we don't accidentally reveal who the mole is, it's fine.
I will say the one good thing about Dutch production is that sort of they'll have ideas that sort of seem weird and they'll try them, where I think American TV sort of has an idea, thinks it's a little bit weird or too far away from, you know, the same established three or four twists they always do, just won't even give it a chance, and then they'll sort of end up stuck in a rut for, you know, 10 seasons or whatever, and then sort of wonder why the game isn't sort of evolving and changing and having the same sort of impact it had in the early 2000s. Like, if you look at, say, the early seasons of Survivor, you know, the shuffles are early on, but then you've got the mutiny, the locked boxes, the outcast twists, all of those sort of things. They're sort of, you know, one-off twists you can bring back that aren't really, like, they impact the game, but they're not really game-changing. Or, like, Amazing Race, sort of, the early seasons, there's a lot of really interesting experimentation with the yields and the U-turns and all of those sort of things. But then really the last 20 seasons or so, it's basically just been changes to the, you know, how they do the U-turn, and that they haven't really changed anything else.
It is slightly startling saying that U-turns were introduced in ancient history in Tar at this point. I know it's true. But yeah, it's a bit startling to go, yeah, actually U-turns are very much in the first half of Tar now.
Yeah.
First third.
That's right. Redemption Island is in the first half of Survivor now.
Yeah, I know. But if you look for a more recent example, American production is so risk-averse that they managed to somehow ruin this show when they turned it into Netflix Mole.
Yeah.
If they'd swung for the fences as Belgian production do, I think Netflix Mole would have been a lot better than it ended up being. That is, weirdly, the second show I'm talking about here that I gave up on after three episodes, along with Australian Hunted. So next time, the mole books disappear, Mikhail gets into a knife fight, it's time for some paintball, and the mole takes off the filter.
And a Wilhelm scream.
Yep, the Wilhelm scream was very late in the episode this time.
I have a theory on the Wilhelm scream.
Oh, goody.
So I was looking at the bios, and one of them, I think it was Charlotte's bio, mentions that instead of supporting Belgium in the soccer, she supports the Dutch national team. And as you know, all good karaoke enthusiasts know, the Dutch national anthem is the Wilhelmus.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so I thought maybe it's a reference, you know, from Wilhelm Scream to Wilhelmus to Dutch national team to Charlotte, but if it's not that, then I have no idea what it is.
That's my only idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I've tried nothing and I'm all out of ideas.
The other theory I've heard is that in the original Wilhelm Scream moment on film, I think it's as a tree falls.
Oh.
I don't know whether that's true. I'm hearing this very much secondhand, but I think that's where the original Wilhelm Scream comes from. And obviously anything tree-themed is going to be to do with Mikhail.
That's a good idea.
I think at this point you can probably make an argument for pretty much anyone in the cast.
Yeah.
Which is really irritating for me, because in, what, 2.5 weeks' time, I'm going to be in Belgium, and I need to be right this time for the first time ever.
Good fucking luck.
Yeah, I know. So with Lynn going home in the pool, my team is now just Senna and Mikhail. And for the first time in 2 years, Logan is guaranteed to fly to Belgium with at least one finalist, as he has his remaining trio of Stephanie, Charlotte and Bernard. On first suspicions, as I've alluded to in this season, no one had Lynn first or second in first suspicions. The highest Lynn appeared was third, which was on four people's lists: Aaron, Natalie, Alan and Lone. With Lynn going, it means we will have at least one outright winner, as everyone else has first suspicions remaining. And seven people, David V, Euroen, Hector, Sandra, James, the Flemish public and me, all had her in ninth. With a score of 16, where the theoretical minimum is only 15, Euroen is now our outright leader as well, while Aaron and John Dolan, under the name of Jan Kurum and Supremacy, are bringing up the rear on 31. Out of the three of us, Logan's on 17, I'm on 21, and Binnells is bringing up the rear on 22. And the good news for me is that with Lynn going, my team's unadjusted score is now 4.13, leagues ahead of Logan's 4.85. On the adjusted scores, Logan's on 3.17 out of 5, and my team is on 2.75. The order is now Senna on 2.57 out of 5, Charlotte on 2.64, Mikhail on 2.93, Stephanie on 3.11, and Bernard on 3.75. As always, you can do the suspect list each week at the link in our bio or at suspectlist.rtvwarriors.com. And the question this week is, which task the mole did at Segesta? Was it the Sisyphean task, the Danaids, or the Herculean one?
Sisyphean.
I will also say I'm very impressed I've managed to make it through this entire episode without fucking up the word Sisyphean. As you guys know, I cut out a lot of my stumbling on these words, and for some reason I can say the word Sisyphean.
Yes, you do. The episode's like Sisyphean. 20 minutes longer just because Michael's got to edit out his stumbles.
Yeah, nobody's ever really queried why our recordings tend to be about a third longer than the episodes. I'll hold my hand up. It's usually because I fuck up something that I've written down repeatedly, yeah, over and over again.
Remember the week where you couldn't, you know, no, pronounce my Twitter handle? You took about 6 or 7 shots.
I do the outro way too quickly, and you guys know it, and I can never slow myself down enough.
Yeah.
Flanders' suspicions last week were Mikhail on 22% plus 7, Senna on 21, dead from last week, Stephanie on 21 plus 5, Lynn on 14 plus 2, Charlotte on 13 plus 0, and Bernard on 9 minus 6. Final two questions. Who do we suspect and who is going home? And this is the final week of two suspicions. We're down to just one from next week.
So from top to bottom, Stephanie is my number one suspect. Senna is number two. Charlotte is number three. Mikhail is number four. And Bernard is my bottom suspect.
And who's going home?
Oh, who's going home?
Yeah.
I'm glad you asked that question.
You know how
question.
This works, Logan.
I mean, we're only 5 weeks into this season and like 200 episodes into Mole Podcast. You probably should know what my next question is.
I think Mikhail is going to go home and just shock the bejesus out of you two.
God, I hope
the bejesus will be shocked.
I was saying to Bindles before we started recording that we're getting to the point in the season where I'm selfishly going, who do I actually want to talk to in a couple of weeks? Mikhail is top of that list. I want Mikhail in the final three just because I think he will be the most entertaining person in this final five to talk to for the two of us.
Yeah. Did you want me to go?
Yeah, what about you, Bindles?
Well, obviously Mikhail is still at the top. Then Senna. then Charlotte, just because I'm sort of wavering on the clue side of things more than actually doing anything. Then Stephanie, and then Bernard, because I think really all five of these would be satisfying moles, but I think Bernard's the only one I can really rule out. I know I keep saying it, but I think Stephanie next week.
Nope.
I love how we've got through two sets of these suspicions, and you've both said that each other's number ones are going to go home at this point.
Well, next week you go first, and then we can both say your number one's going home.
No, because you know exactly who my number one's going to be. It's Mikael and then Senna if Mikael's gone home. Talking of which, Mikael's my number one, with Senna in number two, Stephanie in number three, Bernard in number four, and Charlotte in number five. The answer to the who's going home question is, honestly, I don't give a shit as long as they're on Saunders' team. Because, selfishly, I want us to speak to Mikael and Senna at the final three. So, it kind of has to be a Logan Saunders loss next week, please. But, ideally, I'd say Charlotte or Stephanie. I think Bernard's probably the most interesting of the three on your team, being honest. But I'm thinking purely selfishly, not even suspicions-wise this week. I think I'd lean towards Stephanie just because you've had so much suspicion on her this season, and there are things pointing to her as there are things pointing to pretty much everyone else in this final five, that I'd like to rule her out once and for all.
I was just thinking, four tries rolling the ball up the hill and how exhausted they were to ensure that they would not be getting to the pillars on time.
Yeah, but then there's the suspicious thing of Mikael being prep to do physical exercise and no one else being like that.
Was there anything in the actual task, though, that he did that made you suspicious?
I mean, it's where you'd place yourself as a mole, I think, if you were given the choice.
Yeah, and that was sort of very obviously I am pretending to struggle sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I know those weights were heavy.
It was an extra 30 kilos at the end, right?
Yeah. He only lasted six more minutes than Senna did.
Yeah.
But it can be a big, big struggle, though, with like a Hercules hold.
Yeah, but you'd think, you know, if he was really struggling with the, like, to even get a foothold, you know, basically running around on his feet, you'd think we would have seen it any of the other times Survivor has done that basic challenge by now.
And also, just thinking about this holistically, I suppose, out of this final five, on paper, if you were Gillen Production, who would you pick as the mole? Who do you think is going to be the most fun and have the most fun fucking around with people? I think you probably pick Mikael. He walks into that room and you go, you're really fun, we want you on the show. Out of any of these people, I would say.
Do you think the mole took a backseat again this week, given that this group is really struggling?
I don't know. I am torn between Mikael and Senna, only because I think if Senna is the mole, he knew the Lynn had the least suspicion on him last week in that case and gave her the doubler.
Because in the second challenge, it was just outright, the only reason why they failed was because of Bernard. So
yeah,
I was thinking the mole probably didn't want to sabotage the spaghetti challenge or the bolognese challenge.
But having said that, again, Senna and Mikael were in the best position to sabotage that challenge if they wanted to. Because if you're a mole, that's the best round to be in. You don't want to be in the early ones where people can point to you and go, you fucked up this challenge. You want to be in the later rounds going, well, I know which one's mine, and I'm just going to pick the other one if I get the chance to. I'm going to lead the other person to pick the wrong one when we've only got two options, and you can blame it on someone else.
Well, you mean like be in the partnership with somebody who picks the wrong one and say, well, you were the one who screwed up, I didn't.
Say it's Senna, and I mean, I'm talking myself out of a Mikael suspicion here, but if it's Senna, not only do you have the giving the doubler to Lynn thing, which is a badass mole move that you can talk about in the end, going, well, you were stupid enough to give me the doublers, I'm going to give them to the person who I know suspects me the least.
But Senna was in the last pair, though. There are only two bowls to choose from.
Yeah, but in the Bolognese challenge, you have two bowls to pick from. You know whether the challenge passes or fails straight away in that position, because the mole will know the order of the dishes. If they are 4-for-4 at that point, you then have a minute to convince the other person to pick your bowl. You can make that work and lead them towards the wrong answer there. You have the most control as a mole in the last round for the Bolognese challenge rather than the first or the second.
Oh, you mean just that the mole did it as a contingency plan if it was 4-for-4, not necessarily... Oh, okay.
The mole's biggest amount of control in that Bolognese challenge is going last, and they'll have known the way that the order was picked. I think it's very likely the mole was in that last round for the spaghetti challenge, because it's the easiest place to fuck up.
And if it's already fucked up before it gets to you, then, you know, nothing going to a loss, but you don't get the suspicion.
No, and in that case, if your ball's still there, you pick the right one and look like a hero. Because it ain't going to win him any money anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah. If Senna and Mikhail could stop being in a pair for every challenge, that would really help me decide which of them I actually suspect. Especially next week, where we're going down to one suspect.
I wonder, like, I know we mentioned last week that all of that boat group is still in this game, and now Mikhail's the only one who isn't.
Yeah.
I wonder if part of the reason they've all lasted so long is because they were all thinking of Senna, and then because he's been paired with Mikhail, they're getting a bunch of points for no reason.
That's what I think. I'm reasonably convinced, and I mean, I'm definitely biased by who I actually want to speak to out of this cast. I'm reasonably convinced it's one of those two right now.
Yeah.
Anything else you guys want to say?
I can't believe we got through an entire episode of this show without making a joke about those ball stretchers.
We're just reformed characters after the start of this season where it was pure filth.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened to Mikhail after the surgery. They had to bring the stretchers out just to be like, well, one's removed now, bring out the stretcher.
If his one mega ball is 40 kilos, he would have needed the ball stretcher for that.
He's 40 kilos lighter now, ladies and gentlemen.
How heavy are your testicles?
Question I get asked all the time.
So on that note, thank you for listening to our Devolvalkia Season 12 recap. We'll be back next week to continue the hunt for the newest mole in Sicily. Don't forget you can contact us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram, where we're RTV Warriors, or you can email us at contacts@rtvwarriors.com. Logan is on the artist forum, known as Twitter at Logs of Quacky. Bindles is a grooming capper, and I'm MJ Harmstone. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/RTV Warriors. Thank you, as always, to the Legion of Subtitlers for the subtitles, and we will see you next week.
Peace out and just chill to the next of flavoring.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination.
Hello again. We're actually going to do something I don't think we've ever done in 521 episodes. We are literally about to record another episode of Historians, but something happened today when I was editing that requires us to come back on and just do a bit of an epilogue to this episode, for want of a better term.
So this is still us from the past, but not as far in the past as yesterday.
Yes, so this is Wednesday that we're actually recording this. We recorded the actual episode on Tuesday, and whoop whoop, Fuzzy got it wrong with the banner. But when editing this week's episode, I realised there was a chance that we may have accidentally stumbled onto a hidden clue that it's worth mentioning now, so I don't forget when I'm half asleep next week to actually mention it. Not just the whole My Name Is reference that we had a lot of fun with, and as you will hear, the Dutch AI had a lot of fun with, but there was more of a blatant reference to Eminem in Mom's Spaghetti being the crux of the second challenge. Of course, Eminem... Is there someone in this season with the initials M&M, by any chance?
Mikhail Mons?
It is indeed. So, I think that that may have been a subtle clue, and I think for the first time in 9 seasons of doing this show, we may have actually found a hidden clue from this show.
Wow.
Which is quite impressive even by our standards, and I will say this now. If we are correct, and this is a clue to Mikhail being the mole, I'm going to be rather smug in the finale. I'm going to be rather smug with Papa Virgil da Costa, or Su Papa Madre, as we're calling him this week, or Gilly Wonka, or Europapa, or Papa Sidon. Fuzzy's going to hate that so much.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Yeah, well, she'll get over it.
So yeah, Eminem clues, we need to be on the lookout for them, because if they are a clue to Mikhail, then... You know, we worked it out. Whoop, whoop. And since we're about to do a Historians episode, I will leave you with a hint for Historians. All I will say is D800. See you next week.
Peace out and just chill until 20 seconds from now.